Welcome, everybody, to the Real Growth Podcast here at Realty Growth Headquarters. It's located at 416 South Broadway in Rochester, Minnesota. Today, I am super excited to have a very special guest for many reasons, not only because I'm obsessed with his business, but I'm really interested to learn a little bit more about this individual. So today, we have Will Forsman, owner, operating partner, barista, also fashionista, and we'll get into that because I remember an article, but we can get into that, why I said that later. But welcome, Will, to the Real Growth Podcast. Thank you so much for being a part of this.
Thank you very much. You know, we appreciate getting an opportunity to share on a new platform, and you guys are interviewing some really cool folks all of the time, and I've always been, a little bit envious, right? You know, because you see people on here, and you're like, gosh, it'd be really cool to be on that podcast. So I appreciate it.
Well, here we are, and I'm really excited to have Will here. Like I said, this is awesome.
Now I'm nervous.
Oh, gosh. Well, don't be nervous. We got this. So I guess the very first question, Will, let's tell us a little bit about your journey growing up and how you got into this business, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the one of the other big questions I get is, did you go to school for business?
Yeah.
And I'm one of the rare exceptions, I think, to this, or at least, an advocate for the fact that you can learn a lot of things by yourself. You do have to make a lot of mistakes, but a little bit of the backstory to myself, I'm what you would call the operating owner for Cafe Steam and our sister company, Colorway Coffee Roasters, in partnership with my business partners, Kai Garcia, Nathan Staff, Hunter Downs, and Tracy Downs, and who are an integral part to our success, and I call upon daily with my questions. So in that sense, there's that mentorship that that I've been able to pull from in my history of business ownership. But I got my start. I'd gone the normal route and gone to college and got halfway through and realized this is kind of a waste of not only my parents' money, but my time. And I wasn't doing anything that I really had a passion for and that I felt was benefiting, my personal journey through life. You know, everybody has an obligation to be able to explore the versions of themselves that they find fulfilling. So come back from school, was in a traveling band for a while, and as many find out, that is not as financially sustainable as you'd like, and realized I needed to pick up a job at somewhere. And my guitarist had a solo gig at the coffee shop that existed prior to Cafe Steam, which is called Press, many years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I was interested in coffee. I thought it was a really cool place because Rochester didn't have another brick and mortar coffee shop, and it seemed to be the place where everything was happening. All the cool people were hanging out there, and you could get cool drinks and talk to people and just have a real conversation with them. And I asked, if they were hiring, and they said yes, but only for a dishwasher. And so I just said, I want to jump into it. I've clearly got nothing else going on. So started there, didn't have many hours. I think I was working 12 to 15 hours a week, but I was hungry. I could feel it in myself that I wanted to be able to do more. Eventually moved, up through the ranks to barista, manager, and eventually in that transition from Press to Cafe Steam was able to take on an ownership position in the new company. So it was a lot of fate or whatever you want to call it that allowed me to be able to move into that ownership position. Luck, I think, is 99% of it. You hope that you have a good head on your shoulders to be able to recognize when an opportunity comes around that you should, latch onto it. But it still takes a lot of work, even if you are lucky.
No, for sure. So when would have that been, Will, when you got ownership?
So there was, I think it was, I want to say 2016. So I was not one of the original owners of Cafe Steam. Kaya Garcia, Nate Staff, Hunter and Tracy all saw that there was a foothold to maintain in the previous coffee shop that had existed. There was one other owner who was interested in transitioning out, had other companies that they were interested in. I was able to take up their shares. And so it was just kind of one of those things where I think they recognized in me that I had a passion for it and wanted to continue, and it allowed me some skin in the game so that I was now more dedicated than I was previously.
No, for sure. And yeah. I think oftentimes that's how people do actually get into ownership, especially as a young entrepreneur such as yourself, right? Because in the beginning, we don't you just don't have any money or anything like that. And so it's, how do you become a partner? And I think that's it's also a learning thing for people out there that are listening to this. Yeah. Like, cause I know a lot of people say, well, I don't necessarily want to be an employee all the time. I also would like to have the ability to have ownership. Well, this is the perfect way to do it, that oftentimes people will look and say, well, you can become the operating partner and you'll have some skin in the game then and be an owner. Yeah. So I think that's really cool. The other thing that I noticed is, and this is, I feel very important, partially because of the things that my dad taught me in business. You learned from the bottom. Mm-hmm. You learned every facet of the business. And I remember my dad, I was in high school, and I was like, oh, well, I'm interested in hotels. My dad said, okay, Nick, if you want to be good at hotels, and I was like, well, I don't even know what that means, but if you want to be good at hotels and know hotels, he said, you need to understand every part of the business. And so I did. Mm-hmm. I did housekeeping for two months. Yep. I did maintenance. I did front desk because that's what I was usually doing. And then when I graduated from college, I was kind of like you, Will. I was a history major. Mm. Like, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. But then I learned the management side of things. And that is so critical, I feel like, especially when you're running your own business, because you understand then what it takes. And if you have to jump in, you're not afraid to jump in. Yeah. So I think that's really cool. So maybe let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, working as a dishwasher, what were some of the things that you learned, well, right?
Part of it is you have to work for some really awful people sometimes to recognize what it takes to be a good employer. I've worked in, you know, construction jobs. I've worked pizza shops. I've worked as a dishwasher outside of, you know, my role, you know, at the very beginning in college. I was a dishwasher, and I've worked in some really bad environments. And there are two kind of avenues that an individual can take from that point. It's either you can come to expect that that's at what every work environment you're ever going to be in is like, and that can be not very motivating when you're trying to, you know, gain entry into the workforce. The other avenue is that you can come to have a higher expectation of those around you as a result, and in thinking like, well, if I'm ever in this position someday, I know that I'm not going to do X, Y, Z. And I think I took more of the, you know, the secondary route, where I'm really just trying to be a better version of all of those leaders that I'd had previously. And you know, I can't comment for, you know, every facet of my position that I'm, you know, there are obviously areas in which I hope to improve in that sense. But you have to understand every part of your business. I mean, I know what, you know, I know when the milk or, you know, orders arrive at, because I know, you know, how to wash the dishes and how to do every single part, because I lived those positions for years and worked those positions and spent thousands of hours doing, you know, some of the simplest tasks. And that provides you a vantage point to know when your staff really are encountering some difficult things. I think there is a huge miscommunication oftentimes with business owners and their staff, because they have no idea what it is that their staff are going through. And so they'll bring up, you know, sticking points or issues and be like, hey, I really need some help with this. And managers or ownership can be very, you know, brush them off and be like, that's kind of a you problem, or that's something that you need to take care of. And that makes people feel really unsupported. And so your turnover rate becomes a lot higher, and you find that you're having to replace staff at, you know, you just have this revolving door. And so our retention, you know, is higher than other coffee shops. And so I'm super thankful for that, to have that perspective. And so it's almost necessary if you're going to be, you know, not successful. Obviously people do so without having gone through that and are successful. But I find that it just gives a whole more whole picture to the entire company.
I think you're right. And I also think there's a level of respect too, Will, that comes with that, right? When you're actually in it, doing it, and truly understanding what your employees or what the employees go through and what their jobs are and how hard and difficult it is. When that happened, I had such a incredible amount of respect for what is done and how difficult it is.
Yeah.
And I think that goes along with it. And then vice versa, they say, wow, this guy, he's getting his hands dirty and he's willing to do whatever it takes. And I find myself still, not all the time, but when I go to the hotels, if someone needs help behind the front desk, I'll do it.
Yep.
There's no shame, Will. Like, it's actually fun. I actually really enjoy enjoy that aspect of it. And that's what I love, honestly. Well, I'm not just saying this, but like when I come to Cafe Steam, I see you almost every morning usually. Yeah. And if your staff needs help, you just get right in there and help. And it's, in my opinion, it is one of the biggest factors of showing a healthy culture and a healthy business is when you see owners such as yourselves just helping out. And I think that does a lot for morale. And once again, I think it really helps the employees really respect you and say, God, this guy is really cool. Because I can say your guys' culture is awesome.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
We're pretty culture heavy. And sometimes that comes at the detriment of the business, I'll be honest, because you can kind of get in your own head about how things could be run. It moves so far away from a corporate model to where, and we have some rigidity in how we structure ourselves and just training and so on. But that culture is what people are there for. I was just in Chicago for a few days, and those franchises that are really corporate and you can go in and get the same product every single time, but you're having these very rigid interactions with the folks that are taking your order, etc. I was on this block of there were five franchises and one locally owned shop, and it was one run by this one guy at this locally owned place. It was called Cafe 53. Each one of those storefronts from a franchise were totally empty. And this is Chicago. This is Hyde Park, Chicago. There are thousands of people that go in. And you go into this Cafe 53, this small, run by one guy. And there had to have been 20 people in line. And he was in there taking orders by himself, having a conversation with somebody. It wasn't, well manicured. It looked like hell in a lot of areas, and clearly it was lived in, right? Mm-hmm. But people loved it because he served a good product, but he also had that interface of like, this is something very unique, and it's like a fingerprint, and you could not take what he was doing there and put it somewhere else, which is really difficult to do.
And I think I actually kind of want to touch on that a little bit, Will, because I think it's really interesting. For the longest time, I think in businesses specifically, I mean, we see it in a lot of things, whether it's coffee shops, restaurants, hotels, the franchise model, and how for a very long time that was king. Mm. But I've seen, I can only speak from the hotel standpoint, a shift, right? Boutique hotels.
Yes.
And that's where I think it's very interesting. And do you feel, from your opinion, is that like a generational thing where it's like, oh, I want something unique and something local and something different? Yeah. Or it's just, I don't know. Or is it just something that people were craving and we just never had that opportunity to create something like this?
I think it's a mix of just the cultural relativism that is moving away from cookie cutter things or really heavily manicured presentation. And you can see this in a number of different ways where businesses are moving away from these, on their social media platforms, getting away from these really inorganic representations of their company that aren't really showing a true experience, to now just taking photos on your phone, on your cell phone, and showing what life really is like at these businesses, because it builds that connection. As we've moved towards, as you've mentioned over the last few decades, a lot of those franchises have become successful, but now they're having problems because they're losing that soul, right? They don't have that same level of just emotional investment in their businesses, and that gets really hard. Why that change has shifted, I don't know. Exactly, but I think it's because people recognize the importance for that of that genuine connection with the businesses that they're spending money on, and maybe it is because you're spending your money somewhere. You want to know that it's not going to some bigwig CEO, and people are trying to think more ethically in their personal investments. Things are becoming more expensive. Cost of living is increasing exponentially, and now every time we spend a dollar, we want to make sure that we're not only providing for the product that we're purchasing, but the experience of that product.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to say too, Will, is that you won't find me going to, and I'm not just saying this, to a Caribou or a Starbucks to sit down and have a cup of coffee. I don't find it inviting. It's not what I envision in my mind what a coffee house or a coffee place should be. And once again, I'm no coffee connoisseur. I actually just started drinking coffee about 8 years ago, and I'll tell you that story because it's actually pretty funny. But what you have created, in my opinion, is exactly what I envision a coffee house to be. Mm-hmm. You guys have created an inclusive community that is open to everybody. It's super relaxed. I oftentimes find myself going there, Will, two times a day to not only have, in my opinion, the best coffee I've ever had. Mm. And once again, I'm no connoisseur, but I truly believe that. But just a place where I can go and, like you said, talk to someone or just see someone, be around people. It's lively. It is truly a cool place to be. You guys have really created it's something really, really special.
Yeah. And honestly, that's it's so wonderful to hear, because on this side, you're in the mud, right? You're digging through it. It's really hard to have the customer's perspective in a lot of sense, which is where that valuable feedback that you often get from people of like, hey, have you considered this kind of thing? Really refreshing to hear it, because oftentimes, and this is for most small business owners, you can tend to only see the bad. And it's not like there's something bad with the company, but you're the one paying the bills. You're the one getting the invoices every single day. You're the one, you know, having to deal with, you know, any number of things that might be the unattractive parts of business ownership. So the hope is that your output and that sweat equity that you're putting into your business is then going to be enjoyed by somebody. And that's something that's experienced by chefs. It's experienced by the baristas, is that you're creating a product that brings joy to somebody. And it's not just the coffee, but it's that experience that you're having. But coffee shops are one of the few places where you can sit down and have a genuine conversation with somebody. It's almost like a diner experience where you're sitting, you know, with other people and able to interface in a personal way. And that's something we haven't really been able to do over the last few years. And so, you know, there's a surge in people seeking that human connection and being able to, you know, identify with somebody else. But it's something that has existed in coffee shops and cafes for 500 years, and it's what people enjoy the most about them. So as you start to move towards that corporate model, it loses a lot of that human connection that is so valuable to those small businesses.
Yeah, and it's just been really interesting to me, once again, not being a coffee drinker except for literally like 8 years ago when I started, how big coffee has become. I remember when I was in third grade, I had my cousins lived in Seattle. This is before Starbucks was big. I went to the very first Starbucks and it was a drive-thru. And I'll never forget that. My parents tried it, and this is before, like I said, this was the first, there must have been like two or three Starbucks. Like there's nothing, right? And my parents became obsessed with like Starbucks coffee. And I remember as a kid, I was probably in second grade, and I was just like, oh, well, this is crazy. Like, but my parents swore by this Starbucks coffee, and then all of a sudden it exploded. But I just remember recently, probably in the last, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, it's amazing, in my opinion, how quickly the coffee business has grown. Because of course you always had your Starbucks, you had maybe a few mom pa, you know, cafes, this and that, but the Folgers, the Columbia coffee, whatever. But it's really started to get commercialized. And I think what has happened in, you know, we are a capitalistic society, but they, coffee companies have created such a good job of marketing it's for the masses, right? It's for the masses, you know? And I think it's even gotten to like, I find it really interesting that it's even gotten to like the younger people, the younger generations, where it's like, oh, well, you know, I can't go to a bar cause I'm not of age, but guess what?
Yeah.
I can go to coffee shop and I can be with my friends and have a coffee. And it's just, it's so interesting to me how that has gotten ingrained into our culture is, you know, coffee is, it's for everybody, and it's something cool and it's something fun, and it's a great way to socialize and interact with your friends and family and get to know new people.
Yeah. It's that third place. There's this, in our orientation for staff, we cite, there's this short story by Ernest Hemingway called A Clean, Well-Lighted Place. And it, as awful as a man Ernest Hemingway was, what he wrote was beautiful in so many ways. This short story was a dialogue between an older cafe worker and a younger cafe worker. It's late at night. There's a gentleman that has overstayed his welcome and, you know, hasn't really bought a whole lot and is taking up space. And the younger cafe worker goes, I really wish he would just go home. Cause I too would like to go home. And, you know, he isn't contributing to the environment in any way. And the older cafe worker says, well, everybody has a right to be somewhere, and everybody has a right to that third space, that clean, well-lighted place. And I think that's something that I hope to, you know, embody with the spaces that we create, is that, you know, you don't need to go there for any one purpose. It is the room of requirement, so to speak, of what you need at that time. Do you need to study? Do you need to meet with somebody? Do you need to, a place to relax? We live in the shadow of a healthcare giant, and a lot of people need to separate themselves from that very sterile environment for something that is unique and comforting and cozy. And that's all that we're hoping to provide. And along with a shared love of good coffee, we're not in it for some. I'm not in it for the money. I wouldn't be here if that were the case. I don't, you know. You end up living very modestly as a result of business ownership. And in order to, you know, move up in the world in that way and become, you know, rich off of it, you end up finding that those business models often take from somewhere. And the what you see most commonly is that they're taking from their employees, in the sense that they're working them very hard, they're underpaid, and so on. And so some small businesses and coffee shops and corporations get, a bad rep for that. And that's really difficult to see, but you can tell it's because they're, you know, in it for perhaps the wrong reasons. They need to, everybody does it for their own reasons, but I find most fulfillment doing it because it's something that I enjoy, yep, and providing these spaces for Rochester.
And I think that's wonderful. And you can definitely see the passion there, Will. And I think, you know, for entrepreneurs and just people in general, going after your passions, I think you had alluded to that earlier, you know, going after your passion and really focusing on that, and that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really great. So I kind of want to rewind it back a little bit, because So you went to college, and I, like you, had no formal training in business whatsoever. I had no business being in business, to be honest. Like I said, I was a history major. I didn't take any business classes at all. None. Economics, nothing. Mm. Was that a similar route that you took?
Totally. I remember end of your high school graduation, they all flash up images of the graduates and they list where they're going to college and what their majors are. Mine said North Dakota State University, majoring in witchcraft and wizardry. And I didn't care. I went because I was expected of you.
Correct.
My parents and I love my parents to death. They were putting me on the right course. I wish I had spent more time and energy focusing on education. I would probably be, you know, a lot wealthier than I am today as a result, but I didn't see the purpose in it. And I had no lack of a willingness to learn that which I felt was important to me and brought benefit to my life. And it's hard to tell, you know, an 18-year-old that, sure, yes, studying anthropology is important to the well-being of your future life. I would encourage anybody to seek higher education if that is what they're interested in, and if that's what they think will bring fulfillment to them. But even heading into it, my heart wasn't in it. And I think I realized early on enough that I was not into it, so that I didn't get to that 4-year degree. And now you're saddled with student loans and all these things that are like, shoot, how am I going to apply this to an actual work environment, which is really difficult. And there's a change in the economy and the expectations for colleges, so that people are going for more deliberate degrees, and more power to them. You've got folks that are, you know, in these degrees that are not workforce related. So, mm-hmm, you know, it might be philosophy, it might be history. Yeah. Sure, you can find a gig doing it. They're ultra competitive and hard to come by. So, yeah, just willingness to learn every single day and to do something different.
And I think that's really important. I think that's something I know I often tell everybody in the office, that we all have things to learn from each other. And I don't know. I know I don't know everything. And I have to ask, it could be someone that just got started in the business. Mm-hmm. I might have to ask them a question but I think the willingness to learn is really important, especially as a leader. Because if you think you know everything, I always tell everybody, if someone claims that they know everything, they're lying to you.
They're lying or trying to sell you something.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay. So college. All right. Great. Now you're working at Cafe Steam, or it was Press at the time.
Yep. Yep.
What started this passion? I'll call it an obsession with coffee. Like, was there anything in the past, Will? Like you loved to drink coffee or what?
I was a tea drinker when I was working at at Press, the coffee shop originally. And it was because for one reason or another, caffeine in the concentration of a lot of, you know, espresso and that such, I'd wig out, you know. But you find, I remember my first experience was going up to a cupping, which is a type of sampling that you do as a roastery, where you bring in lots from all over the world and sample them next to each other in very small amounts. And I wasn't taking it very seriously. I would smell a coffee and I would look at them and go, smells like coffee. And I was like, of course people do it nowadays. And I'm like, and I got to one cup in it and I smelled it and I went, this one smells like barbecue. Is this a flavored coffee? And he goes, no, man, it's the coffee. And I was like, whoa. So my whole world was changed from that one barbecue coffee. Now that's not necessarily an attribute that you want. But I realized that in that moment that there was so much more going into coffee than what I was giving it credit for. You know, it's the terroir where it's being grown and it's the processing method to take it from, it's cherry form to the form of consumption. There's the roasting that goes into it from its origin to you having it in your coffee. There are no fewer than 9 sets of hands that have touched that single bean in the process of going from country to cup. And it gave me a much greater respect for it. And it also had such an entry level education point to where you didn't need to go to some class. And you can go to classes and it's great. You don't need to go to some class. You can research online. You can purchase books for yourself and self-educate to have that knowledge basis. And a lot of things are overcomplicated with coffee. A lot of, and it's also more complicated in ways that people don't anticipate. But it's something that you can know right off the bat whether or not you're making something good, right? It's not like, I don't know what comes to mind is welding, where you can weld something and it not being having a structural integrity or something like that because it's hidden within what you're creating. It's not like so many other trades where it's hard to appreciate almost at an instant whether or not it tastes good. And when it comes down to that subjectivity, you can learn very quickly as a result whether or not something is good.
So gosh, that's crazy. So like this is like, I'm thinking, you are like a sommelier of coffee. And is there, I wanted to ask this question.
Yep.
Are there people like that?
There's an equivalent called a Q grader. Now it's actually almost equally as rigid or as difficult to get into that Q grader status as it is to be a sommelier because you have to, and it's a money thing, you know, it's expensive to get that status. Sure. Because you have to then fly out east or out west to do it. And these companies that do so need to be able to support themselves and sustain themselves. But that gives you some credibility when purchasing green coffee. So from the colorway side, when we're sourcing coffee, we get it from all over the world. And if we find a sample that we don't necessarily like, you can go back to the to your trade partner and say like, hey, you know, this quality isn't really meeting us. And I know that and I can say that because I'm, you know, Q grader status. I don't have that title yet. I don't know that I ever will. I would like to provide opportunities for those that are working for Colorway to be able to, if it's something they're interested, have that experience. But again, it's not something that's entirely necessary. If you know that you're tasting something good or tasting something bad, you can generally pick it out. But there are also quality defects, so like something that went wrong on the agricultural side, where there's an over fermentation or something that makes the coffee taste sour or gross, that's often hard to detect. So you'll buy a bunch of it, and then you realize there's a defect, and you're like, crap, now I'm stuck with 2 tons of a coffee that's that tastes really bad. So it can be important, but it's only if it's something that you choose to provide or give that importance to.
Sure. Well, gosh, I just find this really fascinating. So, okay, you said Colorway Coffee.
Yep.
So let's talk about kind of, I guess, the business a little bit more. So, you know, you got into it, you became an owner operator. There was one cafe steam location. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Yeah. So our growth over the last few years, it started in 2015. We kind of hit, and there were other, coffee shops in town. I don't want to be, you know, reductive of it, but for what we had, that brick and mortar coffee shop, very few existed. And so we had our footprint that became larger and larger, and we found ourselves having a capacity issue. We couldn't necessarily serve as many people as we wanted. And there was a need that was recognized for us to open other locations. And it's in part because you want to expand every company has an obligation to growth. We had an opportunity with a Starbucks that had existed in the Hilton Doubletree. The hotel that owned it saw that there was a change in business downtown as we came about, and they said, well, why don't we just, you know, go ask them if they would like to run this cafe. And we thought, great. Turnkey, you know, pretty easy, all the equipment. We bought our own, you know, specialty equipment to increase the quality of the coffee, but everything was set up for us there. Great. And so that was a pretty natural transition. And it was the first risk that as a business owner I was mm-hmm. taking on, and it still seemed like such a huge risk at the time. And I think it was a great learning experience. From that point, in 2019, we opened up actually 2 locations within a week of each other. And it wasn't by plan, but it was our project with Thesis Beer Project, mm-hmm. which was a micro cafe. It existed as a coffee shop in the morning and a brewery at night. Beautiful spot. You know, as a result of COVID, that one we were forced to consolidate after the fact. Really small footprint, fortunately, so the impact of it wasn't, you know, detrimental. And then our one Discovery Square location, which is in partnership with Mortensen and the great folks there at in those buildings. And that one was another venture into something new, right? And you know, you're working through build outs and you're doing all of these things and taking on a lot of you know, additional risk. Of course, Mortensen was integral in the success of that project. From there, so now we're at 3 locations, right? Mm-hmm. And so you realize suddenly you have this really big company underneath you. You're purchasing product from a coffee roasting company, and we were working with Roastery 7 out of the cities. Great friends, Alan and the folks up there. I was able to do some traveling with them as a result. So going through Ethiopia and Kenya, and awesome. Super thankful for those experiences with them. But we recognize that, like, if we're gonna do this right, we need to be controlling our you know,
vertically integrated.
And it opens up your margin quite a bit if you're able to meet that capacity. And with 3 locations now, we're moving quite a bit of coffee every week. And so that was far less of a risk because it's one of those things where it just made sense. You know, as a business owner, some things just click and you're like, that, I wanted to do this yesterday. The opportunity didn't exist. We looked into building out a facility and it was incredibly cost prohibitive. Some of the vent, just the ducting associated with it was $700, $800 a linear foot. And so just to put a roaster into a space, not only the upfront cost of $25,000-$30,000 for the roaster, but now you're looking at $25,000-$30,000 just to get a vent put up into the ceiling. And that was one of those realizing like, no, it's just not going to make sense. Got a call, end of 2020. I think it was like 2 or 3 days before Christmas. And
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, right. From the owner of Narrow Road Coffee Roasters. And he asked if we wanted to purchase some coffee grinders. And I was like, sure, you know, come take a look at it. And I knew that he was, you know, doing some roasting. And I was like, so what inspires you to, you know, to try to get rid of this stuff? And he said, well, I'm looking at transitioning out. You know, I've been roasting for 10 years now, and it's really only been a side hobby. Never really wanted to, you know, go Hollywood with it, and was able to provide his clients on a very ethical basis and working with local churches and such, but he was ready to make an exit. I said, well, what would you want for all of it? And of course, this is deep COVID, right?
Yeah.
We don't have the money for this. But it was one of those things. And he came back with a number and we back and forth and we were like, gosh, you know, here's what it would cost for us to start this up on our own. Here's how much money we would save. You run the numbers and you're like, okay, here's how long it would take for us to make this back. And so for the last 2 years, we've been now figuring out how to roast. You know, I'd taken some roasting classes, but just teaching yourself how to do this. I was making some terrible coffee at first, really, really bad. And fortunately, we had a good relationship with our previous roaster where we were able to kind of slowly incorporate our own product, get it dialed in, and start roasting. And I'm doing this by myself. So I'm roasting for each of our locations and then providing, you know, support for them as an owner. And I realized, I was like, gosh, I'm just running out of time. And we weren't really at a capacity where Colorway itself could support staff. Mm-hmm. Get an email from Austin Power. And I thought it was a fake email Austin at first. And he said, you know, yeah, I'm moving from South Carolina and, you know, I'm interested and I've got 10 years of coffee roasting experience. We'd love to chat or at least explore what employment opportunities we have at Colorway. And I was like, I called him within 5 minutes. I was like, I'm going to be super honest with you. We're really small. We don't have the means to support this, but I'd love to keep talking with you. So he came out. God, I haven't talked about coffee like that in my entire life. And we just clicked. And Austin as a person is so hugely important for the coffee roasting side because he brings that 10 years of experience into it. And even though we weren't at a point really where we could support it, I was like, we can't miss out on this opportunity to have somebody like Austin with us. And so we made him an offer. Because we were so small, we were only doing roasting a couple of days a week, and he also has barista experience. So it's like, Austin, what would you do if we were to do split time, do barista stuff, which is a huge load to take on. But he was like, I'm all for it, because so awesome to do. Now as Colorway's growing, we're going from 2, 3, 4 days a week of roasting. You know, we're roasting close to 500 pounds a week for not only each of the locations, but our regional partners as well, coffee shops and grocery stores. And it's super cool to now be able to provide our own take on a product that has existed for hundreds of years and be able to provide it at a quality level that I think Rochester seems to really enjoy. So yeah,
that's really amazing. Yeah. The growth that you all have seen it's incredible to watch. And
very opportunistic. It's not like, I think, folks are comfortable taking an incredible amount of risk in business, as they should. That's what one thing that keeps people out of business, because you can't go half in. You have to be all in, or it's not going to work out. And for us, we are, you know, I'm dedicated to this 100%, but we've also been able to recognize a lot of really good opportunities that allow us to grow in that way.
So yeah, that's cool. So I know you had mentioned with your previous work, you know, going to various countries, are you still doing that? Or like, where are you sourcing this from? Because I'm actually really interested, because I've actually been on a coffee farm before in the Caribbean.
Oh, really?
So I actually got to see what you're talking about, and it's nothing what I thought this was. I had no clue, to be honest. I wasn't a coffee drinker. I didn't pay any attention.
Yep.
It's crazy. So who are your partners and where are you finding and sourcing your beans and all this?
Yeah. And that's one of those important perspectives that Origin Chips are able to provide to coffee roasters, is it you now understand the process and how difficult it is to go into it. So now you're more willing to pay a lot more for coffee than you may have been previously, because agricultural products are it's a lot, very labor intensive, and you don't make a lot of money as a result. And they're super fluid and difficult to manage. But it is nice to be able to go to the location and meet with the farmer, understand their struggles and what it takes to make just a good cup of coffee. So we source from, we work with a number of different importing groups, Cafe Imports being our largest provider, and they source coffee from all over the world, and they provide us with samples, and we are able to do that cupping that I'd mentioned, where we're sampling different coffees side by side. from there, we determine, well, what kind of characteristics are we looking for in a coffee? Are we looking to fill out a portfolio of processing methods that are taste really good? So much like wine, wine has, you know, nuanced flavors associated with it, both in the origin and how it's being processed. Coffee's the same way. We wanted it, and there are two ways that you can do that. You can either just like only serve the coffees that you think taste good, which is great. But there's also providing people with the experience of like, okay, you're looking at a list. I want various processing methods and so forth to pick from, because I want that to try different things. So a lot of our coffees right now, Colombia, obviously huge producer. We use it in a number of our blends, as well as the single origin coffee that we provide. Kenya and Ethiopia are two of my favorite origins. I've been fortunate enough to visit those farms meet with the folks there. But those are two places that we regularly get coffee from. But then you can get some from places that you maybe have never heard of. Yemen, Burundi, Sulawesi, these countries that are really small, don't have a huge export economy for coffee, but they produce a really high quality. Yemen was one of my favorite coffees ever, and we were able to have a Zoom call with the farmer that grew the coffee, and he just very interesting guy and very passionate about coffee and providing it to and having his growers and pickers be provided with a fair wage outside of the fair trade qualification. So for every pound of coffee that we purchased from them, 95% of that purchasing price went back to the farmer itself. So naturally we're purchasing at a higher dollar amount, but we know that we're doing so ethically, and it's was a fantastic coffee. So other origins, Costa Rica, Guatemala, all you know, the standard, all any country between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn that are at an elevation of X, you know, I think it's it has to be 1500 meters above sea level, that kind of thing.
I like asking not only business owners, entrepreneurs, younger people, but how do you find time? Because this is such a passion and such a mission and such a big part of your life, which I think is really great, because I feel that this is more than that. This is a hobby for you, Will, which is really crazy, because people oftentimes can't say that about their occupation. But how do you then translate that into, okay, I need Will time, or spending time with family, friends, significant others, whatever that means. How do you do that? It's the magic question, I know.
Yeah, there is no Will time, and that's the hardest part. And I think it sets in as for business owners pretty early on, thankfully, and where they realize like, oh, this is my life now. Every you're getting phone calls, you know, every 30, my phone was just going off, and you could see I kind of changed my mannerisms. So I'm like, I know it's something, you know, that you're not excited about, but you're going to get that call at 5 a.m. You're going to get that call at 11 o'clock at night. I can't tell you how many family dinners, Christmas, Thanksgiving, I've had to cancel because a pipe bursts in your location, but it's less of an impact on you. It's more an impact on the people around you. And if you can surround yourself with individuals who recognize that that struggle, it can just be very difficult on the people in your life. You know, 75% of all marriages that are in a small business end up in divorce because of that, both the financial stress and the time stress that's associated with it. Finding the right people, you're a bad friend to the friends that's a small group of friends that you do have. You're a bad, you know, a sibling or whatnot, because you're not necessarily able to dedicate the time to fostering those relationships like you would. You don't really have any free time, and any free time that you do have, you feel guilty for taking, because you think, I could be working, or you're laying in bed at night. I can't tell you how many times I wake up, you know, in the morning, and I think, and I know there's somebody working right now. And I could be working, I could be doing that. So you have to grapple with that sort of internal struggle too, which is often very difficult, but, try not to paint it in a negative light, you know, and make sure that if you are having somebody work for you, you're providing them with a good environment to work and one that they can support themselves with. And that should satiate any sort of that stress or anxiety that you have with taking your own personal time. I go to the gym. That's about the time that I provide myself with each day, and try to cut out time each day to do so. But other than that, any hobbies that you have outside of it are just accessory. They're not something that you're able to develop a passion to. And your mindset changes that so that every move that you make is how to support, better support your business or how to better grow your business. But it's the tragic truth for a lot of business owners. And you, I know so many you know, business owners that are my age that just have zero social life. You're only ever going to see them when you're visiting their business. And those are the real ones, that get it. And it's just, yeah, they don't really have time for vacation. If they do take a time, you know, a lot of time off, they have to extra communicate, you know, and try to set things up prior to leave. But, yeah, and they're not paid well to do what they do. You wonder why people get into it. And, once they're out of it, they hopefully never get back into it. But you do have serial entrepreneurs that like, you know, do their thing, sure. And they fail and, yep. And they go on to the next thing. Those people are tough to be around because they're, that just because it takes away from a lot of the difficult work that it is to be a business owner.
Yeah. But oh, for sure. Well, I just want to talk about a little bit about how I got in contact with Cafe Steam. And this is pretty funny. It was 8 years ago. And my buddy from Portland was visiting for a wedding from college. And we had a college buddy that was getting married up in Minneapolis. He stayed with me. It was a Friday night. We went out, of course, did the whole thing and woke up Saturday morning. And he said, Nick, I need a coffee. He said, well, you know, you got a local coffee shop. I said, well, I don't drink coffee. I had one cup of coffee and it was actually in Lithuania. Because in college, I went on this 1 month Eastern European class about trade with the Teutonic Knights and things like that. And it was crazy. But after
what's a Teutonic Knight?
Well, I don't even know anymore.
Okay.
But it was just crazy. But after every meal, we would eat dinner late. And after every meal, they'd bring us a cup of coffee. Huh. And so eventually, we're probably 3 weeks into this thing. And like I said, we're in Lithuania. And I'm like, okay. My classmates are drinking coffee, but they've been drinking coffee probably forever to stay up, whatever. I've never had a cup of coffee. I tried it. I was like, oh, I don't like it. So fast forward then to 8 years ago, my buddy from Portland says, I need a coffee badly. And I said, okay. So I was living close to Soldiers Field at that time. I said, let's just walk. We needed to take a walk.
Yeah.
We walked down to Cafe Steam. He goes, hey, do you want anything? I said, nope, I don't drink coffee. I had a cup of coffee and that was like, whatever, 3 years or 4 years ago. And I like it. He goes, oh, I'm going to get you something. You'll like it. I said, I don't like it. No, trust me. He goes, I'm going to get you a mocha. I said, okay. I said, but I probably won't drink it. He goes, well, you will. He said, it's like a hot chocolate. I said, oh, okay. I like hot chocolate. From that point on, I had half of my mocha and I will tell you, I was so buzzed. I was shaking. And from that point on, I was hooked. And I swear to you, I've almost been to Cafe Steam almost every single day. Yeah.
You are single-handedly supporting Cafe Steam on some of those mornings.
And then he was like, well, just because like, oh, this is really good. He's like, oh, well, don't worry. Like you'll graduate from the mocha at some point. I still haven't graduated in 8 years.
No. And that accessibility is what a lot of coffee shops tend to lack. You go in and it's, you know, you can order black coffee or nothing else. And it maintains the, you know, that upper echelon quality part, which I really love. And for many concept cafes that you can do just, you know, a very straightforward coffee, nothing special. But where does the everyman, you know, how do they gain entry into the coffee world? And a lot of it starts with those, you know, the Frappuccinos and the things. Yeah. Now we don't serve Frappuccinos, but we need something that is a nice transition from point A to point B, where if you're coming from Starbucks, if you're coming from Caribou, if you're coming from any of these chains, you're able to find something that you recognize, mochas, and say, well, I know the quality of the mochas that I'm used to. I wonder how these compare. And when you are met with that change and that increase in quality, you go, wow, I want this every day. That's what we're hoping to see. Now, accessibility needs to come in a number of different ways. Not only are you having a product that people recognize, but you also need to be available for folks. So your hours need to be very consistent so that they know that they can visit you on any day and you can be open the same hours. You need to have parking, difficult downtown, almost impossible to some. You need to be or walkable. So just determining how do you get your product to people and make it as accessible as possible is really important.
Yeah, for sure. And I just been like I said, I've been hooked ever since. And now I even have my 2-year-old not hooked on coffee, but eggs. Hooked on the breakfast the sandwiches. Let me tell you, this is no joke. My 2-year-old every night, this is no joke. Every night when we go to bed, she'll say she thinks it's the next day is going to be the weekend because why? She wants to go to Cafe Steam to get her egg, sausage and bread. And that is no joke. Last night when we went to bed, she goes, "Oh, wake up, go coffee shop."
All right.
And she says, she calls it her mission.
That's so awesome.
It's her mission. We're going to go on a mission. And the
Watch
mission is to go to the coffee shop.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So you have created this obsession even for 2-year-olds. Mm. And I think it's awesome. And the other thing, Will, I want to just touch on a little bit is like the partners that you guys have created too, just like locally with your baked goods.
Yeah.
Can you maybe just touch on that a little bit? Because you guys are so community focused and I really love it. I really love it.
Try to find a local vendor for as many things as you can because there's the self-serving part of like, you know, you're going to be able to promote them. They're also going to be able to promote you. And typically, so for our example, our milk from Capper's Big Red Barn, they started out as a super small dairy farm and we went to them and were like, "Hey, we'd love for you." And they were a bottling plant, but they were doing mostly that home delivery stuff. And so a lot smaller when they first started, as most people are, and we came to them and said, "We'd love for you to be able to provide our coffee or provide our milk." And because when we tried it in our product, oh my gosh, it was an entirely different world. And we needed to, they needed to scale up to meet that demand over time. Then eventually they were providing milk to every specialty cafe in southern Minnesota. They were going up to Minneapolis. They had something like 12 different cafes as a result. And you love to see that type of growth because you know that at its genesis, it started with a partnership that you were able to create. They did all the work to get themselves to the point of growth, but you know that you can owe a lot of that, or you can take pride in the fact that you were able to be there at the beginning. So honey, another example, Beeshed Honey Farm. I think we were one of their first larger clients for a lot of our ingredients. We use honey. Sweet House Bakery, again, small bakery, started up. Now they're providing every coffee shop in town with pastries, and we purchase from them on a daily basis. And so many other smaller vendors that, you know, you have not an obligation, but it's almost a sense of respect for each other that you need to be able to support each other because without those stepping stones and those jumping off points, you're not going to be able to find the growth that you need to sustain it.
Yeah. So we talk about growth. This is the Real Growth podcast. We've talked about growth here and there, the past, how you guys have grown to where you are at today. Where do you see yourselves moving forward, and what does that growth look like?
That is,
it's always been very organic, and I appreciate that.
That is a question that I get all of the time.
Yep.
Where are you hoping to take this? And I think those folks with, you can have a vision for where you want it to be. You're often disappointed by where small business can take you. I often joke that, you know, people will say, "Oh, I haven't seen you in a bit." And I say, "Yeah, well, I'm at my beach condo." Joke, I don't have a beach. There's no way on this planet we'd have a beach condo. But it's one of these things where you need to manage your own expectations. And so I come to it with no expectation as to where it's going to be. You just recognize opportunity, see where there are unique markets that you can hit, provide for needs that are not there. I think I started the first 2 years of Colorway of like aggressively pursuing clients. But that's awful. It's an awful, cold call sales are a terrible industry to be in. I know that I wanted to sell more coffee to people, but what I needed to do was recognize where there was a gap in their service. So I was like, "Hey, I see that you're a restaurant. What are you doing for coffee?" And they said, "Well, we've always wanted to." So you have to kind of find the cracks in as water finds its cracks through the rocks. You can't just try to bust down the door and try to get people to move from one product to another. That's often impossible. So find those needs where they are, meet the needs, exceed expectations of the customer where you can, and then just kind of continue pressing on. But I try not to ideate too much on like, "Oh, I hope we're worldwide someday," and it's just, that's just not going to happen.
You need
to So there are any number of shapes that Cafe Steam can take on. I don't know that we'll ever get into franchising. I don't know that that's an interest in, for me. Because
well, let me know if you do, because I would love to be a part of this. Yes,
And for a lot of franchisees, they have that soul. I know a lot of people who do so, and they're invested in it as it is their own business. Such is often not the case, though, and so you can. I wish I had a very succinct and beautiful answer for that of where is Cafe Steam headed. We're headed to tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And I know we'll be open for the next, however long and with no plans on that changing. But I wouldn't be sitting in this chair if I thought that we were in any other different position.
And I actually really appreciate that answer. You know, Bucky and I have now owned this Realty Growth since 2016. And we've always preached slow and steady wins the race.
Yes.
And just take it a day.
Spread too thin, yeah.
Take it a day at a time. Because I think I feel very fortunate that now we're in like growth mode. Mm-hmm. But 8 years ago, we could have said, oh no, we're gonna do X, Y, Z and really try to make this thing explode. And we just weren't ready, Will. Mm-hmm. We just weren't. And now organically we've grown. Bucky has been a huge part of that for us with all the social media stuff and everything. Yeah. But we've slowly have gained
one day
notoriety and it's one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that, like what you're doing.
But
and
take each day seriously, right? Make sure that you're learning something that day or doing something new for yourself, but you don't have this template and you guys are big on culture and team building.
Yeah.
Your team is each has your own departments, but you have a soul in it and it is your part, which is super unique for that type of model.
And like we've talked about, our people are the heartbeat. The people are the heartbeat of every organization. Yeah. And you got to take care of your people.
Yeah.
You have to, because without them, we're nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're nothing. So, well, I think we're getting to time here, if you can believe it. Any last thoughts for the people that are watching, listening, just, you know,
gosh,
this has been so great. Like just hearing your story, not having like any, you know, experience at all with any of this, anything you would tell anybody out there, I don't care what the final thoughts are, but
I wish I had something very esoteric and philosophical to end this on, or something that made me sound really smart. You could say, you know, don't sweat the petty things and don't pet the sweaty things. But I never heard
that, the second part of that. That's hilarious.
It is almost impossible for those enjoying the work of small business owners to understand the struggle and the risk and the financial risk that a lot of them take on. What's difficult to understand is if small businesses close, it's not just like it goes away. A lot of small business owners are then thrust into years of legal battles and a lifetime of debt as a result to fulfill something that would be cool. So take it seriously. If you do go into small business, please take it seriously. And it can't be a hobby thing. It can't be something that people are like, I think it would be cute to open a coffee shop. I know we were talking a little bit about that. And because you need to be providing for something. You're not there to take from something. There also needs to be a conversation about the competitiveness in the business owner or business ecosystem, where you're not fighting over pieces of the pie. You're trying to grow the pie. So how are we, Rochester can handle more coffee shops. It just needs more coffee shops that are fulfilling the culture of coffee shops. And that's for that industry specifically. I know that is not exclusive to that industry, but there is more demand for more small businesses and people who are going to take it seriously and elevate the business ecosystem of Rochester.
I love it. And you know, Will, I just really appreciate this conversation this morning. I appreciate hearing the story. The passion is what I love and what I'm really taking from this. I mean, you are living coffee and you are living your business and your dreams and your passions and your hobbies and whatever. And this has just been really, really awesome. So for everybody out there, I want to say, go to Cafe Steam. You will see Will there. You'll probably see me there, but you really want to see Will. Support local, because we oftentimes talk about that here at Realty Growth as well. Support local. Do it, because great things are really happening.
Yeah. Support them because they have a good product. I think a lot of people use the local thing as a crutch. They feel like you have to do it because it's local. You have to do it because it's a good product. And you know, you choose to support local because you want to continue to see them around. Yeah.
And it is, I swear, the best goddamn cup of coffee you will ever have. Excuse me, for me, a mocha. Hard. Mocha or Night Howler.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again. This is another episode of the Real Growth Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. And we'll see you next time.